It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to Origin Story here on Post Show Recaps. I'm Josh Wigler, and today's podcast focuses on a great friend of mine and potentially a great friend of yours, depending on your Post Show Recaps listening habits. It's my colleague, my co-host on the Welcome to Westworld podcast, Joe Garfine, who is a very known quantity within many different fan circles, thanks in no small part to her work on Cancer Gets Lost, a 501c3 sponsored organization that raises money for various cancer charities via online and live auctions of rare and autographed pop culture memorabilia. And that's just a slice of what Joe Garfine is all about. If you do not know Joe, you're about to. She's one of the most delightful people I have ever met in my work in the pop culture space, and it is my great pleasure to turn it to Joe for her origin story. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Josh. It's so nice to hear your voice again.
When was the last time we spoke with our voices rather than just like texts or Instagram messages? Probably since Westworld ended.
I think, the Westworld season 3 finale, which is bananas. Yeah. It feels like it was years ago, and yet it was months ago.
It was literally this year. Can you believe Westworld season 3 was 2020? This has been the longest of years.
Honestly, guys, where are we?
Where are we? Where we are is Origin Story with Joe Garfine, where we are here to find out how Joe Garfine, the legendary Joe Garfine, how you became a nerd. I don't know. Listen, you and I have known each other for a while. We've known each other for, gosh, it's got to be pretty close, if not a decade, maybe a little more at this point.
Yeah, a little more than 10 years.
Yeah, because we met on the set of Fringe.
We met on the set of Fringe, and I have a story later that might blow your mind about how I even got there.
Yeah, I cannot wait to find out, because I remember just like, I've been very open. Have you heard that I have social anxiety? So I'm very open about that. And on any trip like that, I get very, very nervous that I'm not going to fit in, and I'm not going to be able to talk to anybody, that I'm not going to know what to do. We had a really great group of people on that set visit, but you were one of the people who immediately made me feel so at ease. We connected over Lost really quickly, and you know, a lifelong friendship was born on the set of Fringe. But I think that, like, I never really stopped down to be like, how did you get here? Because like, I didn't really know the full Joe story, and I feel like I still don't. I know bits and pieces. I know large swaths of your story, but I think there's large swaths that are missing for me as well.
Fair. I'm excited to share. I'm worried about oversharing, but I'm excited to share.
Oversharing is the name of the game here. First of all, how you doing, Joe? It has been like 6 months since last we talked on a podcast.
I mean, I'm doing as well as could possibly be expected. I'm very fortunate in that my wife Lisa and I both can work from home. But we have recently relocated to Madison, Wisconsin from Northern California, which was a huge change. We moved for work reasons, and it's all positive. But certainly it is very different. We've only ever both lived in California. So it is weather-wise, of course, everyone talks about the weather. I'm enjoying the chillier weather and having a real fall. It's certainly a different pace and life here, but so far, so good.
How hard was the schlep? The schlep from California to Wisco?
It was a little challenging, obviously, with the pandemic. We had, you know, extra safety precautions, both on the California, Wisconsin end, but knock on wood, it all went pretty well. Nothing was actually broken, which is shocking. And it is you certainly get more for your money in the Midwest. I am sitting currently in a basement, which we, of course, don't have in California. And it's turned into a complete fan cave and Cancer Gets Lost headquarters, which we'll get into later. But to be able to have this much space to be a complete nerd is blissful.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, let's become complete nerds here and talk about how we became that way. And by we, I mean you. this is all about you, Joe. And I'm so excited to learn more about your origins, because when I talked to you about potentially doing this podcast, I think you left me with a really big tease that you were like, I actually didn't become a nerd until much later than you'd think. So where do you want to start? Give me the rundown. I know you've got notes. You've got like a series Bible written down.
Well, if you've met me or you know me, you know that organization is in my DNA. Mm-hmm. In a pop culture sense, let me just say that I'm a mix of Leslie Knope, Amy Santiago from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and Ted Lasso.
I think that sounds very accurate.
I mean, in terms of positivity, organization, and maybe potentially being a little bit uptight. So,
yeah, I wasn't going to say that, but I think the positivity in organization makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, I will say that I have taken on the phrase control enthusiast, because a control freak has a negative connotation. And I mm-hmm. used to be not embarrassed by, but made fun of for being so organized. And I think that a control enthusiast is an apt description for who I am and what I do.
Awesome. I love
so,
it.
We'll start with, listen, I was born in Orange County, California. Don't hold that against me. It was always a little bit different. We were a nice Jewish family living among, there were four of us in my high school. There were in my class alone every year during Hanukkah and every year during every Jewish holiday. We were the ones who had to present. I didn't really know what I was doing, but it was always conservative, which is fine. Didn't really even become obvious to me until I left Orange County, but yeah. I did have the lovely distinction of growing up 10 minutes from Disneyland.
Oh.
So potentially that fueled my future geek.
Were you a regular? Is that like if you live around Disneyland, does that just become something you do? Or is it like if you're a New Yorker and they're like, oh, go to the Statue of Liberty often? It's like, yeah, when I was a kid, like for a school trip, and that's it.
I would say as a kid, we went during the holidays. I have to say, you know, in the 80s, going to Disneyland for New Year's or Christmas was quite an experience, as it is now. But I just have amazing memories of that. And the just the sort of kind, hopeful nature that Disneyland to this day still sparks in me and people around the world. So we used to go infrequently. But then when I became a teenager, they would have a dance club during the summer, and for a set fee, you could go between the hours of, I believe it was 7 to 10 p.m., and parents would alternate dropping us off, and I forget what it was. It was Club something, not Club mm-hmm. 33. It was
Club Mickey?
No, I'll have to look it up afterward, but I believe I was 13, and I got a summer pass, and I would meet my friends, and we would literally dance on and off of a stage to 80s and 80s music and then go on rides for a few hours. And it was amazing.
And this was happening nightly?
I think a few times a week in the summer. Yeah. Cause we had a set pass.
It's pretty legendary. And I'm also surprised that that's not like the basis of some kind of like Disney Plus show yet. That feels like that's low hanging fruit, is some sort of like epic adventure set at Disneyland during the summer of like whatever you is with the Donald dance. I don't know what you call it.
I know. I think this was like 86, maybe.
Amazing.
Yeah,
so I'm a fresh 1 year old at that point.
Right. Exactly. But my high school life was consisted of two things, which was soccer and three things, soccer, drama, and student government. So I was I played soccer my whole life. I stopped when I moved to San Francisco as an adult after college, just because the teams are super competitive and I just wanted to have fun. I was a very average soccer player my whole life. I really enjoyed just the camaraderie and making friends on the field. I was in a few plays in high school.
That's the Ted Lasso part of you, though.
Well, also the fact that he has hope and he is and for those of you who haven't watched this show on Apple,
you got to do it.
Apple TV. It's new. It's already been renewed for two more seasons, I believe.
Yes.
And the premise is that it's an American soccer coach who gets hired to coach a soccer team in England. And of course, it's called a football team. But he's boundless in his enthusiasm and hope. And people doubt him and make fun of him for it. And that has been my entire life story. They doubt that I'm genuine. And I am, you know me, I am genuinely like this. Mm-hmm. And so I love Ted Lasso. But yeah. I digress.
So you were playing soccer. You were playing soccer. You were in drama. I didn't know that you were a drama kid.
I still don't have confidence, but in, I'd say my junior and senior year, I was the lead in two plays, with co-lead for Bye Bye Birdie. I was, one of the children in Bye Bye Birdie, and it was a son. They made it into a daughter because I could belt it out. They would take the microphones away.
Hold on a sec. Were you Randolph?
I was. They renamed me Randy.
Joe, did you know that I played Randolph in Bye Bye Birdie as well?
Shut the front door. Yeah. Another thing in common.
When I was an 11-year-old at summer camp, I was Randolph. We both had the same solo. Ed Sullivan.
Sullivan.
Yep, that's
it. That was off tune, but it's early here, so.
Yeah. Amazing. It was connected from across the years.
I love that. And then the next year, I got cast as the lead in Once Upon a Mattress, the true story of the Princess and the Pea, which meant the world to me because I grew up idolizing Carol Burnett. I used to watch repeats of her show, go to my mirror, and then mimic her facial expressions, and that really paid off in high school.
That's amazing. I think I saw that with Sarah Jessica Parker, I want to say, was on Broadway.
Yes. Yeah, I still have the vinyl Once Upon a Mattress framed record in my office as a reminder. And I never had any aspirations to be an actor, I'll be honest. Again, it was like soccer. I really loved the camaraderie of it all. Although that being said, and I'm jumping ahead, in college, I needed a job for the summer, and I auditioned to be an extra on the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and I got the job.
You're on Power Rangers?
I am in 1994, the summer of 1994. My parents had moved out of state, and I didn't want to move with them before my senior year of college. So I, in Los Angeles, enlisted in a company, paid a small fee, and got hired immediately because of my height and my hair. I had some versatility to look like a high school student, even though I was a junior in college. And they just said, you need to buy the color of clothing that doesn't match the Power Rangers. So I couldn't wear, you know, white, black, yellow, red, blue, whatever, green. So I had to go to the Gap and buy orange and very random colored t-shirts and just literally be in the hallway pretending to dance the music that wasn't playing and walk by the Power Rangers. And I particularly was assigned to Amy Jo Johnson to be a person who didn't have any lines because they didn't want to pay me a SAG fee and to follow the Pink Ranger around the fake high school.
How many episodes are you in?
I think 5 to 10.
5 to 10 episodes of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
Yeah.
Can you identify which episodes you're in? Because I'm feeling a Power Rangers rewatch coming on anyway.
I'm not sure I've ever seen myself. I know that there's a recording someone in my family has somewhere out there on VHS of an episode where I'm in the background dancing near a locker.
Is this like season one, season two?
I'd have to look up what 1994 was.
Yeah.
But I remember that I got paid a lot of money to go sit for 12 hours a day, get craft services, wear a t-shirt, and pretend to be a high school student. It was the best summer job I ever had.
If it was 1994, when it was airing or when it was filming?
Filming, I believe.
Filming. Okay. So you're talking like season two, I think.
Okay.
Season two, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. We're doing some quick work on this here. Because I know Amy Jo Johnson wasn't long for the show.
No. And I had a bob haircut. You know, I had this total, the Joe Fro, I had the thick hair, but it was in a bob at the time, I think. I could have been 93, could have been 94. I've obviously blanked it out. I had no aspirations of being an actor and they kept asking me back. And I said, and everyone there was so desperate to be an actor and they came off as desperate. And I would sit in the corner, read a book and eat a donut. And that's why they kept calling me into scenes. It was really fun.
I loved Power Rangers. So this makes me so happy to know that you had a brief crossover with, you were part of the Angel Grove high school posse.
It's Morphin time.
It's,
oh my,
Morphin
gosh,
time. Okay,
it was so great.
So there's an actor's background story to Joe Garfine.
Ish, yes.
And then you were also political in high school, you said.
Yes, I was in student government, again, for the glory. I was not a cheerleader. I was an average athlete. I got the glory, of course, from the high school plays, but that's a limited audience, as we know.
Yeah.
And so I was popular in the sense that everyone knew who I was. I wasn't that I was a popular kid, but I sort of floated around from table to table during lunch back in the day, and everyone knew who I was and liked me. And so I just ran for student government, and I would do these speeches that rhymed and make them into poems. And that's how I got elected. And I think by senior year, I was student body secretary. And I really did that just so I could be the person on the microphone to say, "Good morning, Villa Park. How you doing?" And then do the Pledge of Allegiance and then do the announcements.
So you were the voice. You were the voice in the sky. Yeah.
Pre-podcasting, Josh, I guess, where I cut my teeth.
No, this was destiny. Yes. You were on a collision course with a career in audio.
I was, I guess. Yes. But then I went to school in the Claremont Colleges. I went to Pitzer, which is one of the five Claremont Colleges, a small liberal arts cluster near Los Angeles. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I'm still not sure I do, but I majored in English and world literature because I loved reading. I loved writing. And I had an amazing experience in small classrooms. I think the largest amount of students in my classrooms are 20 to 25 students. Usually there were 13 students in each class.
I'm envious of that. I went to a big university, so basically all of my classes were just like jam-packed with people.
Right. And I think I became a better student because I was forced to pay more attention and the participation.
Nowhere to hide.
Exactly. And as someone who obviously has this big personality and I always wanted to participate, I think it was a chance to finally shine, and I was able to do that. And I went to college with some people who have shaped my life and are amazing, influential human beings, some of which people out there might know. Matt Nathanson, he's a famous musician, and I think most of you know him from his big hit, Come On, Get Higher. He also did a remake of the song Laid for the American Pie soundtrack. Anyway, he's married to my college roommate. And he is an amazing musician, and he taught me so much about music and is just an incredible personality. Just the sweetest guy, but just super cool. He walked into Pitzer. We both had long hair. He came from Boston. I came from Orange County. And for some reason, we bonded immediately. And then he wound up dating and marrying my roommate. And so he's to this day one of my best friends and one of the coolest guys I know. And then, Max Brooks went to my college. He was a year older than me, dated one of my friends. Max Brooks, the author of World War Z.
World War Z.
Among many other.
Son of Mel.
Yes. One of Mel and Anne Bancroft. Those are his parents, Mel Brooks and Anne Bancroft. Not pretentious at all. One of the smartest people I've ever met. Such an interesting guy. People like that I surrounded myself with in college, I think obviously had some influence on what path I would take later in terms of pop culture. Most of my friends from college are from and still live in Portland and are raising their families there. So I do love visiting Portland, Oregon. And
not
in Portland, lost. Drink for lost fans.
Drink, take a shot.
And one of my best friends is Ethan, who is a pastry chef who worked at French Laundry, and he's still in the Bay Area. And I'm still very close to everyone from college, but not high school. What a surprise.
Yeah, that happens. For me, there's like a group of people from high school that I'm still very, very, very tight with. But I remember leaving high school and thinking, like, all these people who talk about how, like, you're not going to remember all these people, that's nonsense. This is your world. This is your universe. And then you get out there and you're like, oh, it's actually a lot bigger than that after all.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, in 1993 was a pivotal year for my life. Two things happened. One, I came out of the closet. And two, I did a semester abroad in London, England, in the fall and winter, which was a shocking thing to experience for an ignorant young girl from Orange County who'd never been in actual weather.
So what brought you out there?
Well, at Pitzer, they encourage, and 90% of the Pitzer population does do a semester abroad. It's just part of their program. They were big on international studies and social responsibility, both of which also had a lot to do with who I am today. And so, although a lot of my friends did more adventurous study abroads in different countries, I, as a lit major and someone who loved theater, did mine in London, was able to see so much theater and take theater classes, and studying the writing of theater, not the actual acting. And I just had a wonderful experience. And I think I grew up a little there, being alone for the first time and in a foreign country. And experiencing that weather. And it was an amazing experience. I think it helped me become a leader, because as soon as I got back, I became a resident advisor at school. And then I also worked as a camp counselor that summer at Girl Scout camp. And that leads to the very stereotypical story where I met my first girlfriend. It's true. A fellow camp counselor, Josh.
It'll happen.
I mean, it was the 90s. And she was from Texas. And I got a call from the Girl Scouts saying, hey, the person in charge of the horse and equestrian program is coming in from Texas, doesn't know anyone. It's on your way. Can you pick her up from the airport? Sure. Picked her up at the airport. And just so you all know, I had no inkling. In retrospect, I was dumb. But I didn't dated much and I wasn't very successful relationship. So I thought it was me. And then I picked her up from the airport and I had trouble talking, and I'd never had trouble talking before, Josh, as everyone knows.
Yeah, that's not really, you know, we all have our weaknesses. That's not one for you.
It's super true. And I just couldn't figure it out. It was very disconcerting. And I think she caught on to it because she was very friendly and flirty. And I just didn't know what to do until, like, literally I just had an epiphany. We became very good friends. And then we talked about it, and it was like, oh my God, everything my entire life up to now makes sense now. And it has ever since. I'm very lucky in the sense that that's it. That was my coming out. I wrote letters to my friends. It was the 90s, you guys. It was pre-internet, really. So I wrote letters to my friends and family, and everyone's like,
yeah. You sent out missives. You sent the carrier pigeons to all the nine winds.
It's true. And most of my friends,
bring news from the top.
Pre-internet birds, yes.
Yeah.
Par Evian, Josh. Yeah. Par Evian.
Drink.
Drink. No, most of my friends, their responses were, duh, and we always knew.
People knew you were, like, last to find out, you feel like?
I think I was a little bit naive, or 100% naive, but, you know, it all worked out really well. So, you know, that was 1993, finished college in 95. I'm old, hashtag old people.
We don't talk about it. No.
I met my wife in 1997. So, like, literally 2 years after college. But so we've been together 23 and a half years.
And so how did you and Lisa meet?
So mutual friend. It was a Memorial Day weekend. And she said, hey, we're going to this bar to tell her kick off the weekend. I'm like, great. And she's like, oh, my friend's going to be there. I think you met her at a party once. I'm like, great, great, great. To be honestly, I didn't remember meeting her because she had a girlfriend at the time. And when you have a girlfriend, I don't look at you and go, oh, my God, I could possibly date you. So to be honest, I hadn't remembered her. And I walked in and it was like a soap opera moment, Josh. I got the feeling in the stomach of, like, butterflies. And I immediately, this is total fan fiction come to life, went, that's it. I'm done. She's for me. I'm not sure she felt that way until 2 months later because, you know, took some convincing because I'm a lot. Honestly, I hadn't had a lot of super long-term relationships, and she had. She's 10 years older than me. Again, I'm a lot. Took a chance, and obviously it worked out well, but it's just hilarious that I'm such a stereotype. I met my first girlfriend at Girl Scout camp and my wife at a bar. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
and
amazing.
You know, she's a forensic scientist and has many degrees from Cal Berkeley and is the smartest person I know. And I'm very lucky to be able to share my life with someone like that.
Yeah. A forensic scientist. Does that mean you can't, like, get away with anything because Lisa just sees all the evidence everywhere?
I mean, sure. But you know that I have no poker face. I wear my heart on my sleeve and I couldn't get away with anything anyway. But I'm also not criminally minded. Mm-hmm. But that being said, we do still watch a lot of crime shows. I'm all like, you're taking your work home with you. Okay. We watch a lot of the true crime, the documentaries, because it's fascinating to her. Because she also goes, oh, I worked with that guy. Oh, yeah, I testified with her. You know, she knows most of the main players.
Yeah.
Which is super cool.
Yeah.
But I'll go back in time a little bit, which is that after college, I moved to San Francisco because my brother lived there and I visited and loved it. And he basically took out a map. Yes, children, we used to have a map before a phone. And, he circled areas that he thought I should live in, and he put X's over ones that weren't safe for a 22-year-old lady to live. And I rented a room at a house of a friend of his in San Francisco and sort of fell in love with the Bay Area and never left. And I just loved it.
Until really recently, yeah.
Yeah.
And what was it about the Bay Area that spoke to you in terms of, like, this is a place that I'd like to go, and then, like, once you were there, you're like, this is the place for me?
It was so different from both Orange County, Los Angeles. It was smaller in the sense that even though it's literally just a few square miles with great public transportation, or at least it used to, and people were so nice. The pace was a little bit different than, it was a little less stressful than Southern California, again, at the time. And the weather was lovely, mostly year round. And they had everything I needed up there. There were job opportunities. Again, this was the mid 90s. You were able to rent a house for not your entire life, and rent a room in a house for, you know, not your entire salary, I should say. And it was just appealing. My brother was up there at the time, and I don't know. There's something about it that feels like home, and it always will be.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
What are you watching during this whole time? Because because I'm hearing a lot about who you were as a human being, and these are sides of you that I really didn't know, that you were a drama kid, that you were into soccer, that we also have the summer camp counselor connection.
Yeah.
What were you watching? What were your TV shows? Were you watching TV, or did you have no time for this stuff?
You know,
like, what were your movies? What was all that looking like for you?
I'm not sure I can recall. I remember that because I had come out and it was so up my alley, I was really into, obviously, Ellen's sitcom at the time.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, in her coming out episode, I packed 40 friends into a one-bedroom apartment in Oakland to watch on a 13-inch TV. We watched her Oprah interview, and then we watched her coming out episode and all cried and drank beer, and it was amazing. But I digress. Again, my first fandom, Josh, was The X-Files. That was the first show I ever fell in love with and watched every episode and used a tape on VHS tapes and bring them over to friends' houses. That's the first time I ever knew what a message board was on the internet and visited them. I never contributed, but I was always interested. I was a lurker. And that's, I think, when sort of pre-Lost kicked off my brain of, oh my God, I never thought of it that way. There are conspiracy theories about a conspiracy theory show. And so obviously when I met Lisa and she said to you as a forensic scientist, I went, Scully, I'm in.
Yeah, yeah. So you were into X-Files at the point that you met Lisa.
Yes. And yeah. I think that's the first fandom I remember, because before that I would just sort of watch comedies. And then that kicked off, like I said, late in life. I was in my mid-20s when I discovered sci-fi, really. As a kid, don't get me wrong, the most visceral, memorable experience of my childhood was going to see Empire Strikes Back in 1981. For some reason, we were in Redlands, California. I think we were at camping nearby, and I begged my parents to stop the motorhome to get in line to see Empire Strikes Back, and I will never forget that experience.
Yeah. I saw the special editions in theaters. It wasn't quite the same.
fair. I mean, I'm totally showing my age right now, but it's true. Like I said, I think that in retrospect, all this nerdy stuff led up to who I am today. I just sort of didn't piece it together.
Yeah.
This is a helpful conversation because I'm like, oh, okay, now it makes sense.
Yeah, you could track that back.
Exactly. But after college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I worked at a law firm because they hired me to organize their library. Ding, ding, ding. Organize. And I would easily find chapters and cases that they need in that library because it was so organized. Didn't like that very much. Moved over to Olivia Records and Travel, which is still the world's only and best leading lesbian only travel company.
Ooh.
It started out as a record company, very progressive in the 70s and 80s. They still have an amazing catalog of music, and they needed someone to run their warehouse. You'll see a pattern here, Josh. I organized their warehouse. I organized their...
This is in your wheelhouse.
Entirely my wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was super cool to work at an all-female, all-LGBTQ-friendly company, even back in the 90s. And I was the assistant to the president for a while, and she managed a comedian named Suzanne Westenhofer, and I helped her, and she's a hilarious, amazing human being. So I organized, I helped, sub-manage a comedian. And again, obviously, as I'm saying this, it leads up to where I am now.
Yeah.
And then I worked in high-tech PR, Josh. I worked on the Netflix account in 1999 before people really were into Netflix.
I didn't even realize that Netflix was a thing in 1999.
Yeah, I met Reed Hastings, who's, created Netflix. And I'll never forget being in the same room as him. And when he was talking in 1999 about how people are going to be watching television on portable devices, including their phones, no one believed him, but I thought that was an amazing idea. And look where we are now. I mean, obviously he's brilliant for a reason. I can't speak for who he is as a human being now. I only met him once, but it was really, really cool to work on that in a high-tech PR firm. But again, I didn't love it. It wasn't for me. I didn't feel like I was, if I didn't believe in the product or test it out myself, it was hard for me to promote it. So tried PR, wasn't for me. And then I landed a job as a corporate archivist, which is until we moved to Wisconsin, I had that job for 19 and a half years.
So this is where you were right before. So yeah, this is the entirety that I've known you. This has been your job.
Yeah.
Cause I've always been a little in the dark in terms of like, what's the day gig?
Right. Well, I keep my online life a little bit separate. And that's why, there are people and there are, as you know, some unsavory and,
I haven't met any of these people you're talking about.
On the internet,
Josh.
Bands along the way who've tried to contact people in my life. So I try and keep it separate.
Yeah, of course.
But let's just say I was a corporate archivist for many years. I was sort of a digital librarian for a corporation, a company rather, that did amazing live events for large companies and also, you know, marketing communications. So I did a lot of hard drives and digital librarian work, and I loved it because that was my brain. And I was able to do that while I worked on Cancer Gets Lost. So I just like that organizational side of my brain was so satisfied.
Yeah.
I did try, and I think, and I'll get to this with you, Josh, when we talk about the internet, to be a freelance writer, and it was not for me, but we'll get to that too.
Well, during all of this, and by all of this, I mean your life, you know, you're an English and lit major, so obviously I have to assume writing is, certainly reading is a passion, is writing a passion as well at this point in your life, because I know, you know, you're going to end up having, you know, some a prolific time as a blogger coming up shortly here. So tell me a little bit about, like, your love affair with writing.
I have always loved writing, but I haven't had the confidence to really share it. So when the internet became a real thing in the mid 2000s, I thought, okay, I need a name. I don't want to use my name. That's boring. And I'm like, I'm opinionated. Just put a J in front of it. And so I bought the URL japinionated.com, and then MySpace happened. So obviously used my name there. But to go back a bit, I just started blogging. I made a Japinionated site, and I started pop culture rambles that no one read. And I was like, just to get it out there, to get out of my brain, Josh, like
Squeeze it out.
To squeeze it out in case someone came across it. And it really no one did until MySpace, obviously a precursor in a big way to Facebook and Twitter.
Did you know Tom as well as you know Reed?
I don't think Tom is in my top five, to be honest. Yeah. But that's where I would start to write about Lost, and it started to take off. I would also talk about it at work, and people would literally water cooler, hang out in front of the water cooler in the morning and at lunch, ask me to write down my theories, email them, and it became a chain of emails. And then I did a newsletter, and I got really tired of doing that. And my friend Jamie, God bless her, I'll never forget, she said, why don't you just start an effing Lost blog? And so I did.
Yeah.
I started a Lost blog separate from my other blog because there was so much interest in it. And I think because I was spoiler free, and as you know, spoilers became really prolific during that time. And I'm not judging those who put them out. That's a thing for many people. I just chose not to. But I want to go back a little bit into MySpace. There's something that happened that also molded who I am today.
Yeah, we can't gloss over the Lost origin story. So we really need to take our time getting into that.
Yeah. So I'm a huge Deadwood fan. And as we know, it was canceled unceremoniously by HBO. And the follow-up to Milch's Deadwood, David Milch's, the creator, is John from Cincinnati.
Yes.
And again, I'm an ignorant young blogger who is putting my own opinion on the internet, not thinking anyone would read it. So I wrote this article, in retrospect, really dumb. I ripped on John from Cincinnati, and basically it said something to the gist of, we lost Deadwood for this. And I had no knowledge whatsoever about what went on behind the scenes. I posted it on my blog, which then I posted on MySpace. I get an email from Jim Beaver. Jim Beaver. Yeah. An actor from Deadwood. Most of you know him from Supernatural and every other show now.
Yeah. If you don't know Jim Beaver by name, the chances are very high that you know him by face and voice.
Yes.
So I would say just Google Jim Beaver right now and be like, that guy just emailed Joe.
Yeah. It was, he emailed me on MySpace. How it got to him, this is pre-hashtag, Josh. It's like, I don't know if you could search for MySpace under the word Deadwood or John from Cincinnati, but Jim Beaver has been on both shows, very heavily featured on both shows. Obviously, I've loved him on Deadwood. I was mortified because he had a very impassioned, very fair response. And I really didn't know from my ass, Josh, what I was talking about. His response, I had an honest response. His response was, he basically gave me background that nowadays he could never share with the general public. It was unbelievable what he told me went on behind the scenes. I said, may I have your permission to republish your letter to me on my blog? And I said, I stand by my initial response. I'm not going to apologize or retract it. And he said, I totally respect that, and you can publish it.
Wow.
Yeah. Right then and there, I vowed, Josh, to be a kind human being online. And to match the person I am in real life, I knew that I could be constructive without being cruel. That changed my life.
Yeah. It's a tough skill, to be honest. And I think it's I try to go there, and I find myself often mouthing off without really paying it too much mind. Right. Sometimes there is a fine line between, you know, taking something to task because of how it stands and because of what it looks like to you from a critical vantage point, and then just like taking a hammer to the thing.
Yes.
I do think that this is something that I've always really admired about you, is that you are able to, I think kindness first is maybe not an official motto that you live by, but it feels like that's really, a big piece of how you approach any of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I always use the hashtag choose kindness, or kindness is impactful. And it's these little things that have happened along the way that I learned the hard way, but it was an easy lesson to learn. And I'm glad I was able to sort of pay it forward with later on with Cancer Gets Lost. But what happened was Whitney Matheson.
It's like kindness with authenticity is also the key,
yes,
too. Like
absolutely.
This idea of like, I stand by what I said.
Right.
You know, and I think being able to like map those two things onto each other. That is the real tightrope walk that I think that you walk really, really well.
I appreciate that. Thank you for that, Josh. I'm very touched. So Whitney Matheson, who wrote an amazing for USA Today articles and blogs called Pop Candy. It was sort of she would compile all the latest pop culture news, and I really loved it. And we became friends online. And she asked permission if she could post about the Jim Beaver experience on Pop Candy. And that just blew up. I mean, yeah. It was amazing. It was my first time being, you know, sort of mentioned or published, and my blog blew up. But I will tell you this, and I know that this was about 2007, maybe.
Okay.
When
did Deadwood end in John from Sin? That's around 2007.
I think so, yeah. And yeah. Again, Lost is going on concurrently, but we'll get back to that. Yeah. So the fan responses to my post and to Jim, I also was so impressed. They were astoundingly constructive. No one attacked me. No one attacked Jim Beaver. They respected that we had our different viewpoints, and him especially for really sharing his passion for his craft. And that was another lesson that I've taken with me my entire life as I work with actors on Cancer Gets Lost. Respect their craft, respect their method, and know that every single actor comes with a different viewpoint about not only their show, but their compassion and giving back. And so who knew that a MySpace blog post would lead to this, Josh?
Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible. was that happening simultaneously with you developing your Lost blog?
Yes. So I had a Lost blog, I think from end of season two, maybe early season three on. And again, no one really read. What was it called?
Did it have its own?
Get Lost with Joe Pinionated.
Yeah. And so you weren't a Lost fan from the very first episode, right?
No. So I accidentally watched episode four, which I know everybody talks about Walkabout being the game changer, but obviously the twist with John Locke got me going, oh my God. So I started over. I went to iTunes and bought each episode because they weren't repeating it at the time on ABC. Nothing on television before inspired me to the point of losing sleep. My mind raced with possibilities. I had to write them down. I connected with the show on a deep level, which honestly, Josh, is surprising because I actually relate so little to almost every character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That they resonate so strongly in different ways. And like to this day, the character and world building in season one of Lost remains unparalleled.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who's the most Joe character on Lost.
I mean, it's Hurley, because
it's gotta be Hurley,
like being the class clown. I like to divert attention away from myself through humor and make intense, uncomfortable situations a little easier for people. And so I definitely related to Hurley the most. And I'm very good friends with Jorge now, and so he laughs about it whenever I say that. But as most people know who've met him, he's similar to Hurley, but he's also a little quieter, more introspective, sarcastic, and different than him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would say episode five, Josh, White Rabbit, the Alice in Wonderland.
I know that
all.
That's your walkabout.
That is my walkabout.
White Rabbit is your walkabout.
And I don't even have daddy issues, man. I freaking loved it. And I went on to publish a paper about it, present a paper at a pop culture conference, which I'll get to later, but all based on White Rabbit. There's something about that connected with me. And that is the reason I started writing down theories. And I know there were message boards. I never visited ABC or the J.J. Abrams message board.
Like the Fuselage.
The Fuselage. I think I visited, but I didn't contribute because I didn't want anyone's ideas to become mine. I didn't want anyone who started reading me to think that I was glomming onto anyone. So that sort of remained my policy throughout the entirety of Lost.
I know you on this level because I don't remember if this was like the first or second time we met, because we met again on another set visit, I believe.
Yes.
There was like the human target V thing.
Yes.
And I remember you being like super stoked to meet Elizabeth Mitchell. It was great to watch you like fan out so hard in person. It's like, oh, Joe's losing her shit because she's such a Juliet fan. But I remember because that was around the time that the final season of Lost was airing.
Yes.
And I remember like just finding out that the Richard Alpert episode was coming up.
Yes.
And I wanted to talk to you about like, oh God, the Richard Alpert episode is coming up. And I think that I mentioned that you're like, I actually don't even like to know who the centricities are. Yes. Like, I don't even want to know who the Flash. And so like, I spoiled that for you.
No, it was fine.
And I was like, oh shit. But that I know from firsthand is how seriously you took this idea of like, I don't want to be incepted by not just like fan theories, but literally anything.
Yeah.
You wanted to go in cold to everything.
I stayed offline 6 days a week, basically. And especially on Lost days, what I would do, Josh, is, you know, I had a full-time job. I would come home. At 6 o'clock, I'd have a shot of espresso.
Mm-hmm.
I would then take a nap, which seems like a weird order, and eat dinner.
You know what? I feel like the caffeine nap is, if not underrated, I think underreported.
Thank you. I say you get what I'm putting down.
Yes, I do. I do.
I'd have espresso, take a nap, get up, watch the show live, start writing, and write from about 10 p.m. until 1 a.m. And literally people from the East Coast would start emailing me, because again, this is sort of pre-Twitter, saying, oh my God, I'm waiting for your coverage. And I'm like, I'm still writing it. I get that you're on a treadmill in New York, but I'm still writing it. And I would publish it. And it was amazing to have people waiting for and discussing what I was talking about. I mean, to be honest, Facebook helped really, Josh. My Lost blog became a thing when Facebook became a thing, because I never really paid attention to the cast and the credits on Lost, which my mistake. But I started to realize that people from the cast and crew started following me on Facebook, and I recognized the names that I'd go look them up on IMDb and be like, oh, okay.
Who's this? Oh,
it was this.
Yeah.
And I would get private notes saying, we appreciate that you're spoiler free. I got on the radar of ABC that way, which led up to other opportunities. But I also started attending. There was this amazing fan weekend called Lost Weekend, and they would do small charity auctions and fun events with some of the cast and crew. That is where I met, I think in 2007, Javier Grillo Marxwatch. Now, most of you know Javi. Everyone knows him online. One of the most intelligent and loyal, amazing, talented friends I've ever had the privilege of having. He said something to me the first weekend I met him that sort of changed my life. And he said, no matter who you know follows you or reads you, do not change your voice. Do not change the way you write.
Yeah.
And he said, continue writing about the show. I also learned later that there were 5 to 10 blogs at the time that were cut and paste their theories every week and sent to the production staff and the cast and crew to read. And mine was one of them, which is amazing in retrospect and such a lovely honor. That being said, you know, I was analyzing.
Stuff I wonder if any of your theories incepted Darlton or the rest of the writers.
I would say that none of my theories ever came through true. So, I mean, again, I was analyzing what they'd written a year ago. So, you know, once it went to air. I think that they appreciated, though, my passion and my spoiler-free nature. And so Facebook, I also discovered Mo Ryan, who at the time of the Chicago Tribune, I believe, wrote amazing Lost coverage. She also became a great friend. We watched the Lost final panel at Comic-Con together. It was just an unbelievable experience. And so I was really inspired by these female writers writing about Lost. And I was like, I could do this. I met one of my best friends for life, Erica Olson. She had an amazing Lost blog called Long Live Locke. Still up. If you guys want to go read it, it's incredible. And just, I was super inspired by other people in the fan community. And to this day, I say that they are the best because they remain almost to a person constructive. There's not a cruelty to this fandom, even for new fans who've discovered the show because it's streaming everywhere.
Well, I think a lot of that cruelty got weeded out. Like, I think that that's one of the benefits of the divisive ending. Let's call it that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that, like, there are people who are like, this show sucks. It was worth nothing. It didn't pay off to anything. And so they, like, cut bait and ran.
Right.
And they just, like, in their rear view mirror are just, like, sort of, like, broad brushing, like, the whole Lost experience was trash and worthless. Good riddance.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You know, like, goodbye. And so, like, if you stuck with Lost, or if, like, you still consider yourself a fan of Lost, you're probably bound, because the overall message of the show is a relatively positive one, I would say.
Exactly.
I think that becomes a pervasive feeling within the fandom of the show. I think, like, from my experience, too, like, I think it's a lot less of people, like, being like, well, I'm right, and this is the theory, and this is the thing.
Right.
And more, like, people are interested in discussing the themes and, like, the impact that the characters had.
Right. And dare I say, not to disparage other shows, but it required a level of critical thinking, and it still does, that not all shows require. And so that sort of discerned its audience. And there are casual fans, and then there are fans like us who just, right. You know, one of the things I loved is putting together the puzzle of, wait a second, Sun mentioned this, but that was from episode this of this season. And it sort of mapped it out, and it would take notes. And I am staring at my notebook right now. I have a binder of all six seasons of notes I took. Physical notes, not on a computer. And it's just really fun to revisit how crazy my brain was. But, like, how cool is that? I was super inspired to do it. And it was a summer, you know, remember these long, long waits between seasons before binging was a thing?
Oh, yeah.
I think it was 2008. I, for fun, created a whole separate blog pretending to be Jeremy Bentham.
And this was before we knew who Jeremy Bentham was, or
yes.
This was once we knew that it was Locke in the thing.
I believe it was end of season three. Jack looks at the newspaper clipping, and we just see the name Jeremy Bentham. I could be totally wrong. I'm sure someone will take me to task. It's been many years.
Sure.
But I decided to start a WordPress account as Jeremy Bentham and Photoshop different images from the show with poems that had to do with the show. And it was super fun. Until I got a message from someone on Facebook yelling at me about how I'm from the network and I shouldn't be messing with fans. And they traced my IP to my office.
Oh, my God.
And they started they were threatening to publish my personal information. So I had to quit because I'm like, okay.
That's terrifying.
It was weird. But I had fun at Comic-Con that year, Josh. I have on my desk here a card that says Jeremy Bentham with the URL. And on the back, it says, I am not John Locke. Yet I walk among you.
Interesting.
And I would leave them all over Comic-Con, and then people would go to my website when they found it. What a dork. I mean,
I have seen you. We finally hung out at Comic-Con last year.
Yes.
After, like, many years of, like, almost hanging out at Comic-Con. But the only other time that I remember, like, seeing you at Comic-Con, I think twice. Once we were in, like, roundtable interviews for the same thing. And then another time we were, like, ships in the night, literally, like, passing each other on escalators. Like, you were going down and I was going up, and I was like, Joe, and you were
exactly.
Like, dude. And it was a great moment for me that, like, I was, like, observing your, like, very quiet intensity. And now, like, you were, like, deep in your phone, like, you were planning something.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm fanficking that this was you, like, you were, like, dropping Jeremy Bentham clues on the world.
Probably at the very moment. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I also, if it was
you're
the year.
You're a crazy person, but I love it.
Absolutely.
It's
this is why we are very good friends.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a common language that I think most people are listening to this, and only the people who are listening to this would understand. And there is a kind geek common language that really threads us all together into one quilt.
Yes.
And that's what I love about it.
Yes.
No, but at the time, I mean, if this was 2009, it was the last Lost panel. It's the only time I ever camped out. Hall H, back then, y'all, they didn't have coverings for us. We're out in the elements.
Baking, yeah.
And I was at the front of the line, and I had t-shirts. I had prizes. I had Lost trivia, and I went down the line with everybody, and I had so much fun. And yeah, I was very busy at Comic-Con. It wasn't my job, but I had so much fun. And this is just because I had a Lost blog, and people knew who I was, and I was so great. And then Damon Carlton came out, and I think, I don't know if they gave pizza or just high fives, but they definitely came out. And of course, I was in the bathroom at the very moment they came out, so I missed it.
Oh, man. Had you met them or interacted with them at all at this point, or no?
I did not meet them until in Hawaii at the cast crew press party, but I'll get back to that later. No, that was, I had met Jorge for the first time, and Josh Holloway and Nestor Carbonell in the press room that day. I have to tell you, Josh, I was not prepared to go in the press room. I didn't know I was going in the press room. I had been out all night. I did not smell good, my friend. And I went to the panel and I get a tap on my shoulder from someone from ABC saying, we'd like to invite you to the press room. I did not have anything prepared. I did not have a recorder. I, of course, had my an old iPhone. I think I used that. But I went up not asking any questions, but I observed the process.
Yeah.
Everybody else. And it's when I met the cast for the first time. For some reason, I didn't get to meet Damon and Carlton, which is fine. They were aware of who I was. Obviously, I'm a person who makes people aware of my presence. But yeah. It's the first time I met Jorge, and we hit it off immediately. We had a mutual friend who told him I'd be there. He is one of the reasons we started Cancer Gets Lost. I'll tell you later, but long story short, he donated a small piece of Oceanic 815 that he kept for himself. He signed it and donated when he found out my friend had cancer and that I was going to do a fundraiser for her. And that's one of the first things that came to mind when we started Cancer Gets Lost, which I will get to later, but an amazing dude. And I can say dude because he says dude, even though Hurley says dude.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
But just to finish off sort of the Lost thing, because of the Lost blog, I was invited to write for Doc Arts, who had an amazing Lost site. And Dark UFO was also a great Lost site, but they were more spoilery. So I chose to write for Doc Arts, and I told him I refused to post spoilers. And so writing for his site is the reason I got to go to Hawaii in season 6 and to the red carpet. Lisa and I planned to go for fun as fans to the season 6 premiere in Hawaii in January, because why not? And then I got a call from ABC saying, we hear you're going to be there. Would you like to be on the red carpet? I mean, Josh, it was
the
like,
the answer is no.
Like CNN, Entertainment Weekly, E! Online. And then at the very end of the carpet, it was Little Joe Blogger and Jay and Jack's podcast. It was super cool that they included fans.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is a big difference between, I know that they're apples and orange peel smiles, but that's the thing, is like what Lost did with its fandom and the way it was really inclusive in that way from the top down.
Yeah.
And not just like the top down being like Darlton, but also like ABC and down, I think is something that's really missing from some of these juggernaut shows.
Absolutely. And
like, I'm looking specifically at a show about dragons and zombies, right? Zombies. I think like it's something that was missing from that. And I think that was always really apparent to me because I started covering Lost around this same time.
Yeah.
I was covering it for MTV, for the final season was the only time that I actually got to like report on the show and do some interviews with some of the people involved. And that was like my, like, third year as a journalist, something like that.
Right.
It was like a crazy experience for me because I came to it as a fan first and foremost. I started watching it as a sophomore in college, and now suddenly like we're at the final season, I'm getting to like report on it. It was wild to me. And even in those experiences, it was very clear to me that these were people from like the very top of the mountain were like, let's welcome this culture that made this show possible.
Absolutely. And many have tried to follow in the footsteps, but with the proliferation of Twitter and Tumblr, and there's so many more voices now, I think it's hard to really discern. And I really wish I wish that the positive fans, who tend to be quieter, to be fair, and more read and they lurk rather than contribute because they don't want to get yelled at, I feel like they should be celebrated in every show. And certain shows have gotten it right and certain shows struggle.
Yes.
Yes. Agreed. But, so long story short, when I got to Hawaii, I not only got to be on the red carpet, y'all, I get a call the night we arrive and they said, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, what do you need me to do tomorrow? This is again from ABC PR. Mm-hmm. They said, how would you like to go on a press only set visit? Okay.
So they were still filming at this point.
They were still filming, but they took us to places where they weren't filming, but they took us to where the Azira 316 airplane was parked, and it was cut in half. It's just half of a front of an airplane. It's so cool. The rest was CGI. I mean, it's unbelievable. And we went to the beach, Survivor's Beach, and we went to, you know, Sun's Garden and all these different places. Now, Lisa and I had been before under different circumstances by ourselves because I was a Lost blogger and I got some special favors. I'm not going to lie. When we went on by ourselves, we went to, I believe it was season 5, where Jack and Kate were back in Dharmaville.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I, again, spoiler free, didn't know what was happening. We had finished season 4. Lisa and I show up to Dharmaville just to go to around. Not only are they filming, I see Jack and Kate in Dharma outfits. And I have no idea what the F is going on.
In the full on khaki suits.
Oh my God. And they're shooting out with Faraday and all Jeremy Davies. Okay. Like I just, my mind was blown, but of course, and there were people literally offering me money if I told them what I was seeing because they wanted to share spoilers.
Right.
No way in hell.
Yeah.
I get there and someone comes up to me and says, are you Joe Garfine? I said, yes. Oh, we saw on Facebook that you're here. Come with me. And then they took us to the set. I mean, it was ridiculous.
That's crazy.
It was
That's
awesome.
Wild. That's
yes.
wild.
Thank you, PA at the time. I forget your name. but you were great. And so again, I didn't meet anybody. We just sort of, you know, hung out for a distance, didn't take any pictures, didn't write about it at all. And then so shoot to 2010, season 6 premiere in Hawaii. Not only do we do this set visit, which by the way, Natalie Abrams, it was amazing. She and her sister were with us. It was awesome. Eric Goldman, you know, y'all know these names.
Yep.
And that night there was a party for press with cast and crew only. And I said, oh, I'm throwing my own fan party. I rented out a bar on the beach and there's like 150 fans coming and I have prizes and trivia. They said, oh, this happens beforehand. So you come alone, come to meet the cast and crew and then go to your fan party. I'm like, okay. So they're like, no reporting, no recorders. Da-da. So I get there and almost everyone there has the recorder and they're making it all official. So I'm sitting in the corner. I have not met the cast yet. I don't have a recorder. I don't have anyone with me. All the cast came over to talk to me because I was not bothering them for an interview.
Yeah, you're the only one who's just like there to hang out.
Yeah, and it was super cool. Some of them knew who I was. Some of them wanted to know why I was there. That is where I met Michael Emerson. My goodness. He literally took me to the corner to talk to me for 20 minutes. He looks you in the eye. He's so interested. He's so interesting. He's so smart. He's so lovely.
Yeah.
Then he took me around. He goes, this is my friend, Joe. She writes about our show. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable. Danity Kim was there. It was catered and they were making sushi and Danity Kim took over and Danity Kim was making sushi. It's the first time I met Damon and Carlton. It was very quick. They were like, oh my God, hi Joe. Thank you for writing about the show, that kind of thing. And I met Yoonjin Kim. I'm trying to think who else. Matthew Fox wasn't there. Evie wasn't there. Emily wasn't there. They were all filming that night. So the people who weren't filming were at this party.
This is crazy.
It was super
the
cool.
Nonchalance with which you're telling this story too. And I'm just like,
I know. And yeah, I'll get to it later, but I'm so nonplussed by actors. I'm so interested in writers, but that's a whole nother digression. Yeah. So then Jeff Fahey walks in. Okay. Jeff Fahey is a legend.
Chest hair out.
Chest hair, chesty out, which by the way, he very much did not like any of those dialogues or jokes. Jeff Fahey, though, is quietly one of the most generous human beings on the planet. He spends most of his time when he's not doing entertainment work, building houses in other countries for children and working on charity, but he doesn't want to do it for publicity. It's the first time I learned about it when I talked to him in person.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that I was heading over to this hotel next door for a fan party. I actually mentioned to everyone, haha, you should join us. They're like, yeah, okay. So long story short, an hour later, I'm at this party. It was amazing. I had the fans come. It was free. They had the bar let me design my own last drink. And because I'm a huge Juliette Burke fan, I decided to name a drink Juliette on the Beach, like Sex on the Beach, but with Juliette, because of that scene with her and Sawyer on the beach. You are welcome, everybody. Yep. And it was
what was in the drink?
It was like a Sex on the Beach. I don't remember, but orange juice, vodka, something.
Okay.
Yeah. Long story short, we're in the middle of the party. Freaking Jeff Fahey walks in.
He just comes back.
Legend. Everyone rushes over to take selfies and pictures with him. And he looks at me. I'm like, I just mouthed the words, thank you. And I sort of made a line and aligned people up and everyone got to talk to him. And he was overwhelmed, had a drink and left. But like, what a cool guy.
That's crazy. Yeah.
He can't do a fan party.
He strikes me as somebody who, like, I would be, like, nervous to talk to.
Yeah.
Like, because he does have sort of, like, this intense energy about him on the show.
Yes.
And in, like, all the things that he's done.
He does. So, he has those intense eyes. Ian Somerhalder has very intense, similar eyes. They're piercing blue. Piercing.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. And they listen to you so intently. You're like, oh, God, I better say something smart.
Yeah.
I never really did, to be fair. So, cut to, this was January of 2010, Josh. And then, so in March of 2010 is when I first met you.
Yep.
Fringe and V. At that time, after the Lost blog, I'm like, what am I going to do? I don't know what to do. This is a few months before I even had the idea for Cancer Gets Lost with my friend Jay. So I was like, I'm going to be a freelance writer. I have to be honest, Josh, I hated it. I didn't like the structure.
It's
I felt
really
pressure.
Not for everyone.
I'm thin-skinned.
Yeah, you have to have a thick skin, or you will develop a thick skin if you are going to stay in it at the very least, or a thicker skin, because I don't think that I'm thick skinned, but I have a thicker skin than when I first started that journey. Yeah. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's, you know, it's so deadline driven. You have to be a self starter. It's a lot, and you have to be able to take no's.
Yes.
With alarming regularity.
And I don't think I had not only the skin for it, but the dedication to that kind of time and structure. So it was fun. It got me, you know, I got to do these fun things for a while. I never really questioned why, but all of a sudden at the end of February, I get this call from ABC and Fox concurrently. Hey, would you like to go up to the set of V and do an article for your, you know, the Doc Arts or your blog? I'm like, yeah. They're like, we'll pay for you to go up. You stay at this hotel, you'll be with other bloggers and writers. And I'm like, really? Okay. And then I get a call from ABC, from Fox, going, while you're up here, do you want to go to Fringe? Yes. Yes, I would like to go to Fringe.
Because you were watching Fringe at the time, because that's a real sweet spot for you, Fringe, is, you know, it's the mythology and like sort of like, you know, the J.J. Abramsification of a show that Lost brought, but also like really scratching that X-Files itch for you.
Oh my gosh. I had met Jessica Nicole a year before at WonderCon when it was in San Francisco because she was doing a comic. And I walked by and I went, oh my God.
Astrid.
It's Astrid. It's Jessica Nicole. And we totally bonded. And then so I'm like, yeah, I want to go to the Fringe set a year later. So long story short, that's where I met you, Josh, and a bunch of other really cool writers. And everyone knows I had a very not well kept secret that I love Elizabeth Mitchell as an actress and a human being, but I love Juliet Burke. And just like, but she's so controversial, and it's a mixed bag in terms of people who loved her or hated her because she played cards so close to the vest. She waffled on sides of good and evil. And I just thought it was a phenomenal character. And so I had never met her. I didn't meet her at any of the Lost events. So I get to the set of V, and the first thing the PR person pulls me aside and says, I'm really sorry, Liz is filming today, you won't get to talk to her. So I was like, oh my God, it's totally fine. I was so bummed.
I know.
They were totally effing with me, Josh. They did it on purpose so that I would be surprised. So cut to craft services. We'd interviewed a few people. I get this tap on my shoulder. I'm literally in line for soup. It's 0 degrees in Vancouver. Hi, are you Joe? In her little lilting voice. I'm like, oh my God, it's Liz Mitchell. Mm-hmm. I go, yes, hi, I'm Joe. She said, hi, I'm Liz. I'll always remember your name because my grandmother's name was Joe. That's the first thing she said to me. I was like, okay. I said, I know. She's like, I know who you are. I just want to say I appreciate the support. I'm like, mortified, Josh. You read my blog post about Juliet.
She knew.
She knew, but she was so delightful and just warm, and she's got that spark. She's got that spark in her eyes and her personality that sort of comes across on screen when she's not playing characters like Juliet. You know, like when she's playing Mrs. Claus, perhaps.
Right.
But it was amazing to meet her. And then again, the PR people pulled me aside and said, listen, we know, you know, how much Elizabeth means to you, and she has time. We're going to give you 20 extra minutes with her alone.
Yeah.
I got 30 minutes alone in a room with Elizabeth Mitchell.
But I think that this is, I think, in addition to organization.
Yeah.
I think one of your obvious superpowers. I think another superpower is this crossover between kindness, but also authenticity.
Right.
And I think that this is a great story because so we live in a world where bad guys win so often that like it's nice. It's nice to like revalidate that this approach works too, because I think so much of these experiences come from the fact that like you are who you are and who you are is somebody who like really chooses to see the goodness in so many things, but also like exudes that in your relationship to projects. And I think like if you weren't you, you're not getting those extra 20 minutes with Elizabeth Mitchell,
which I totally appreciate you acknowledging, because I am unapologetically passionate. And I think when I meet people in person, and this has helped me with Cancer Gets Lost, when I meet people in person, they get it, they see it, they feel it. And that's why I have formed these friendships over the years.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
just real quick, I just want to finish the Liz story to say that the first thing we do is she said, turn off your recorder. Let's just chat. I know what a Lost fan you are. I just want to tell you about the time when we filmed Left Behind. I literally was nursing my son, and it was ridiculous to walk around in a tank top and Lost in Whirlon and Mud with Liz, with Evangeline Lilly. But we had the best time. And honestly, thank God they never released the extras and the footage from that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my mind is going, what? And then like she... it was just amazing. We sort of went through her whole story And I, of course, got the official interview. But what an amazing thing. And then the whole point of the story is to say that 5-6 years later, I am at ATX TV Festival, which I don't. Have you been, Josh?
No, and I'd really like to go. I hope that it remains a thing.
Oh, I think it will. It is a fantastic, I would even say it's a con. It is a weekend in Austin, Texas in June, which you definitely have to bring a change of clothes for the amount of sweating you do. But it is a behind the scenes for television fans. And I mean the creation of television. It's not just like the tidbits of the extras and the, it is about the making and the process of television and the social issues that go into it and the logistics. And so as on a nerd level, it's my favorite convention. So I am, there's a balcony at the hotel there where everyone hangs out, casts, crews, fans. It's very small. There's only a couple hundred people at a time. And I am sitting there and the head of, former head of PR from Fox at the time comes up to me and I'm with my friends and he's like, do you guys know when Joe went to V and Fringe 5 years ago, he's had some cocktails and everyone's laughing. And I'm like, ha, oh God, where's this story going? And he said, Joe, do you know why you were there? And I said, I've always wondered why out of the blue I was invited and flown to Vancouver for a week to be on the set of V and Fringe. He said, I get an email from J.J. Abrams saying, do you know who Joe Garfine is? Here's her blog. She used to cover Lost. I want her to cover, get her up to at least treat her to a set visit for Fringe. And while she's there, arrange for her to meet Liz Mitchell. Come on.
That's crazy.
I've never met J.J. I have since. To be a fan.
That's crazy. That's
who
insane.
Theories. And it's still unbelievable to me this day that he took the time. This is obviously pre-Star Wars, but he still had a million shows and projects going on. To learn that is unbelievable. And this PR guy was like, I didn't know who you are, but I did my research and that's how you got there. And
that's wild.
It's amazing. I later met JJ. Literally, he's there for The Force Awakens at Comic-Con. I'm at a restaurant and I get up to use the restroom and he's checking in and there's no one around him. It's J.J. Abrams at Comic-Con, Josh, and there's no one around him. And I
thought, how is that possible?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, his office had sent me stuff for Cancer Gets Lost, but I never actually met him. Long story short, I went up to him and I'm, you know me, I talk this fast. I'm so excited. I just was like, calm down, Joe. This is your one chance. I went up to him and I said, J.J., he shakes my hand. He goes, hi, I'm J.J. I said, yes, I know. I'm Joe Garfine. And before I could say anything, he goes, oh my gosh, thank you so much for Cancer Gets Lost. And that's all. And then he took off and I took off and I was like, my life is made.
That's amazing. That's cool.
So
that's
really cool. I know that we'll get to Cancer Gets Lost, but I thought it was important to share all that led up to it because this is who I am.
Yeah. Well, so how do you pivot from this into Cancer Gets Lost? When is Cancer Gets Lost? When is that formed as an idea and then translated into what it actually ended up becoming?
Excellent question. So in 2010, after the show ended, I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life on a pop culture level.
At this point, like, you know, like freelance writing is not really going to be for you. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And I knew I'd always watch and follow the shows of anyone who worked on Lost, and I still do. But I didn't really know. And I was sort of at a point where I was a little like, I don't know what to do.
But I think about like your story about being on the line at Comic-Con and like having prizes and stuff. And like, and so like, I can imagine that more than anything, like energetically, you're interested in like, how do I carry that energy? Like, how do I apply like that energy? How do I like contribute to people like me who are like super stoked on this stuff? And how do I apply that towards something good?
Exactly. So the cut to August of 2010. ABC had the official Lost auction, and it was two very long full days, an official auctioneering of authentic costumes and pieces and everything that went into making Lost. So Lisa and I flew down to Los Angeles, time, of course, we were in the Bay Area, met up with a bunch of friends that I met for the first time that I'd known from Facebook or Lost events. And we spent 2 days in this cold, you know, airplane hangar in Santa Barbara watching this unfold, trying in earnest to bid on things and not winning anything, which was fine. But the whole time in the back of my head, I thought, God, this would be amazing if some of it went to charity. And I looked everywhere. And Josh, I have to tell you, to this day, there's never been anything published about them giving anything. I think they earned $2 million from that auction. And this was in 2010. And I just like, it's something wasn't right with me. And I met a fellow total Lost nerd I only knew from Facebook named Jared Wong. And he came up to me and he's like, he expressed the same thing. We both were trying to win items. And we thought it'd be so much better, so much more encouraging for us if we could win an item, but donate some to charity. And I said, I have this friend right now with cancer and I'm doing a fundraiser for her. And he said, you know, you should really like combine those things. And sort of we had this conversation. I was like, I don't know if I can do it. And to his credit, he kept on me. And then like a month later, we decided let's just hold an auction. Let's call ourselves, we want all types of cancer to get lost. So let's call ourselves Cancer Gets Lost. And we said, okay, we'll start. He said, well, you're so connected. Maybe people can donate things. And I had a lot of followers at the time on Facebook and not necessarily Twitter at the time. And I mentioned it on my Lost blog and I put it out on Facebook. And yes, people from the show started donating things. Bad Robot donated a large amount. And from our living rooms, me in San Francisco and Jay in Los Angeles, we were able to put together this auction in honor of my friend Jackie, who had brain cancer. And we donated the proceeds to the National Brain Tumor Society, which is the charity that she chose. She passed away a week before our first auction. So It took 2 years. In 2012, we had our auction. She was so excited for us and she was sort of the influence. It was amazing. And then it was a real honor to be able to donate. I think we raised $55,000.
Wow.
When these are two nerds who just put our money together and did this. And we're like, okay, we have something here. And long story short, sort of, you know, initially, Jay's family provided funding and then I took over because I was able to, and he had a full-time teaching job. And Lisa and I now fully fund Cancer Gets Lost that we have for about 6 to 7 years now. And it is we don't have children. Cancer Gets Lost is our child and our college fund.
Yeah.
But since then also, like, so my mother-in-law got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and we lost her after 4 years. My dad is currently, knock on wood, a blood cancer survivor. He is part of a miraculous clinical trial that has saved his life and been extended recently. So, it affects everyone. And the reason we want to continue Cancer Gets Lost and the reason we started it is that every single person, if they don't have someone in their family, they know someone who's had cancer.
Yeah.
And with research and technology, people are living longer and they're having lives. And so to be able to raise money for cancer survivors and their families and research and help fund a cure, it's the greatest thing I've ever been able to do with my life.
Yeah. And how much of your life does it take up? Like, how much is your day consisting of Cancer Gets Lost?
Well, I mean, until recently, until we moved, I had a full-time job. So it would be like weeknights and weekends. As of last month, I don't have a job. So it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, I'm waiting to see what happens politically and socially and with the shipping system. I'd like to do more next year because this is my full-time job. I don't get paid for it. I don't take a cent. I never will, but it's a full-time passion. Is a better way to describe it. I should go back and say, for those who don't know, Cancer Gets Lost, because there might be a few, is a nonprofit. We are a 501(c) sponsored by a philanthropic company out of New York called FJC. They specialize in doing the fiscal sponsorships for small organizations that aim to be 501(c)(3)s, but don't have that status yet because of how small we are. So they don't touch money. They handle They handle our PayPal account. They handle all the money. And so, and they have the 501(c) status for us. And we just do the organizing and the auctions ourselves. So long story short, we auction off pop culture memorabilia and donate 100% of the proceeds to a different cancer charity every year. Since 2012, we have raised and donated over $300,000.
Wow. That's pretty insane.
It's interesting because I'm proud of it, but I also think, God, I could be doing more. I'm just so hard on myself, Josh. I just feel like I could be doing more. Now I have the time to. So I'm challenging myself to do a few more smaller auctions this year, now more than ever with COVID and potentially with healthcare changes due to the congressional and Senate issues.
Right.
And Supreme Court, you know, certainly nonprofits for cancer are losing their funding and or not getting the funding because people are funding COVID related charities, which they should.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask how not just, you know, the pandemic, but even just like our present political nightmare, like our current political moment, like how have these things impacted this work?
Well, I am in a position where I don't want to ask people. No one has the expendable funds that they usually had, you know, $5 to $50 to $100 to spend on a charity auction or donate to a children's fundraiser for cancer. There are people who would stretch to do it out of the goodness of their heart, but I feel I've taken a step back since June or July was my last sort of mini fundraiser. But I see people struggling. I get it. People losing their jobs, their housing, their livelihood, their health, their lives. And so I'm being sort of careful and I'm observing until I feel, not that it's safe again, that people maybe are more comfortable with the idea of giving back in this way and for this kind of cause. But you have to be cognizant of change and of hardship.
Yeah.
But we have to give back. That's, you know, take a lost saying of we have to go back. We have to give back, especially now.
Yeah. No, it's a time to be alive.
Yes.
You know, for sure. And I think so many industries are changing, and the way we, you know, have to go about our lives is so radically different right now. And it occurred to me as we were talking through all of this, the ways in which I think, like, even the work you're doing must be so deeply impacted by this current time.
It is, but for me, I'm more of a middleman because we raise money for other organizations. So the people impacted are the cancer charities and nonprofits, which is why I have been researching. You know, I always choose a different kind of cancer to support every year. In 2021, I will tell everybody that we are supporting the Colorectal Cancer Society. I have two friends, young friends around my age, a little younger, who have colon cancer, a young woman and a young man who are very dear friends of mine. And it's just, people really don't think about colon cancer at our age, but they really should. And so the Colorectal Cancer Alliance is amazing. And I don't think they get the kind of credit or name recognition that they deserve. So we will be supporting them next year.
Great. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I just have to say that it's not just Lost fans. I know we've been focusing on that because that is sort of my bread and butter, but I would like to publicly acknowledge the fandoms. In Cancer Gets Lost auctions, we sometimes feature 75 different TV shows and films, and they show up, man. They show up without complaint and with their wallets and their hearts. And I get choked up thinking about it because, you know, moving forward, it's going to be so important for every cause. But I just appreciate every single person who places a bid or even retweets and can't afford to bid, but they can retweet and get the word out there because someone they know might have this particular type of cancer or have, you know, $5 they can spare. And so right now, obviously, Josh, the world is focused on the negative and there is a lot of negative. But I would like to highlight, and every day I search for the good is out there, the greater good, it exists. And there's hope and there's heart in people. And I think that if we focus on that and highlight that as equally as the negative, that there is a good balance to be achieved online.
Yeah. In terms of fandoms, and so Lost ends and, you know, you start turning your attention to this. But, you know, this is also around the time that you and I are going to cross podcast paths. I think 2014 is our first official podcast together when we did the Lost Live stuff on Post Show Recaps.
Yes.
That's where you meet AJ Mass, and you and AJ Mass will go on to do the Dropship for a year.
Yeah.
The Hunge, the podcast about the Hunge. And so like that is for me, like that strikes me as like the era of the Hunge where you were both like getting involved from like a philanthropic standpoint, but also still doing like the theory and like the fandom involvement as well. Was that a tough act to juggle for you?
It was a little bit. For those who don't know, Josh, I joke about the show, the hundred, yes. We call it the Hunge because why not? I had been involved on a charity level, you know, just fundraising and, you know, doing Cancer Gets Lost auctions. And I had become friendly with a lot of the cast and crew of the Hundred who are delightfully generous human beings to a person. And I also was super interested in the first few seasons of the show and was writing about it for my friend Aaron's site, Sci-Fi Mafia. Shout out, Aaron. Thank you for the opportunity. And AJ Mass and I decided to do, I think he asked me, a 100 specific podcast. And I had connections through Cancer Gets Lost and we did a few interviews and it was wonderful until it wasn't. I will just say that thank you to everyone who listened. But
the podcast was great.
Yeah, it was super fun. We were totally nerded out about theories, which were absolutely wrong most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
We had some wonderful interviews and two
familiar turf for you and I.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, I'm not going to disparage this fandom because they were very good to me, the majority of them, and Cancer Gets Lost. And so I would just say that despite the success of the Dropship podcast, it has since disappeared because there are people who still are pointing things out that we have said five, six years ago that aren't relevant anymore. And I will own up to the fact that I maybe said some things that I regret or were stupid, both on Twitter and on the podcast at the time. But nonetheless, after the Lexa of it all, after 307, we had to stop. There were some harassment issues and some cruelty directed at people I know and love and myself. And so it wasn't worth it. I mean, I had Cancer Gets Lost and that's always going to be my number one focus. So I decided to sort of not write about the show or podcast anymore, or try to engage less and then focus on CGL. And thankfully Westworld came along.
Well, I was going to, that's where I was going to go with this next is because like, I, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like you have, where you have landed is sort of like your sweet spot.
Yeah.
Where I feel like you get to do like the, I'm online at Comic-Con and I'm giving things to people.
Yes.
I'm helping people. I'm helping them turn the volume up on their love and appreciation for a show, because that's authentically where I come from. And I'm using that as a conduit to an even greater good.
Yes.
While simultaneously, like, the crazy super theory nerd that exists within the human vessel known as Joe Garfine gets to have that on specifically Westworld, which right. I think is a show that has activated, like, that lost-ish within you in a way that only maybe The 100 ever came close to doing.
Agreed.
But I think that, like, it seems to me that, like, you have a relationship with Westworld that is, like, at a comfortable remove. Like, I feel like you're comfortably distanced within Westworld. And I don't mean, like, distanced away from. I think, like, you are, it strikes me, and please tell me if I'm reading this wrong, that I think that you seem to be, like, exactly where you want to be with that. Like, that is allowing you to, like, your brain ball, as we like to say on the Westworld podcast, still gets to be engaged, but at a level that, like, you can emotionally tolerate.
You are totally spot on. It's like you know me, Josh. I learned from The 100. To stay in my lane. And my lane is theorizing, but not engaging to the point of personal, getting it, making it personal. And unlike other shows, unlike The 100 and Lost, I don't really know anyone except for one producer on Westworld. So I don't have that connection. You know, you, because of your job with The Hollywood Reporter, you get to interview people and you have a connection to the cast that I usually do, but I don't, which I kind of like. I'm purely a fan who has bananas brainball theories that I get to talk about with you on your podcast. And I am distanced from it in a way that I enjoy it, because I podcast with you about one show a few times a year and I get to focus on Cancer Gets Lost the rest of the time. So you're right. This is my sweet spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. And thank you, by the way. And by the way, yeah, for all of you, listen, thank you, because Josh and I go off the rails
all the time
and it just brings me great joy. And there's such a puzzle aspect to Westworld. Every season, it's a new puzzle. And even if all the pieces don't fit correctly, unlike other people, it never bothers me. It never bothered me who was on the Outrigger on Lost either. I don't care for answers. I'd rather do a choose your own adventure. And Westworld certainly provides us with that.
Is there another show that has, like, come close to activating this side of you?
No.
Like, do you imagine that scenario ever coming up where you think, like, those love letters have been written?
I imagine there will definitely be one in the future. I also live in great fear of a Lost reboot.
Yeah,
I have said publicly that if there is a sequel or a prequel, I would totally be down. I will not watch a reboot. I will not watch a reboot without Damon and Carlton, and they will not be involved. Even if some of the actors come back. And I know that I will be asked to comment about it ad nauseum, and I will talk about it if it happens. I also wish I knew how to write television, Josh, because boy, do I have an idea for a sequel.
Is that something that you're interested in, writing for TV ever?
I think I'm terrified too, because so many of my best friends write for television and they're so talented and I'm totally intimidated by them. I don't know. I've outlined an idea for a Lost sequel in graphic novel form.
Ooh, interesting.
And so I need to find an artist and sort of flesh out some ideas. And I am strongly considering, since I don't have a job right now, doing an online MFA, Master's in Fine Arts in Creative Writing, or a master's degree in creative writing, to sort of learn how to write in that way.
That's really cool.
I don't know.
I think, like, your journey is one of like things manifesting.
Yes.
You know, like, I think there's a lot about what you've just said that feels, you know, you mentioned how, like, you can't relate to the characters on Lost.
Yeah.
And yet something that you share with them is, like, they were drawn to the island. Destiny brought them there.
Yes.
I think destiny brought you to this moment.
I like that. Josh, so you're my hype man.
Where's it going to bring you next? I want to know.
I know, you know, me too. I mean, before COVID, I became a moderator at many fan conventions. And I love that. Again, most of it's because of my connections through Cancer Gets Lost with the casts and crews. And they ask me to moderate because I know their shows. I've done many 100 conventions, Lost conventions. I would love to continue doing that once this whole thing is safe to do conventions again. That's certainly, again, I do it unpaid and for fun and for free, and because I love it. So I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me because everything I do in pop culture, Josh, I do it unpaid. I just don't see myself in a position where I do it for a job. So I feel like I'm at a point in my life where I need to figure out the next chapter. And that's pretty exciting because I'm able to take the time, and I am working from home to do so, to figure out what's next for me.
What are you watching right now?
Oh, gosh. We just finished season one of Ted Lasso, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Delightful. Lisa and I are actually doing a slow rewatch of The Sopranos.
Oh, cool. That's fun.
It holds up, except for the, you know, the whole racism and homophobia. It really holds up, but it's very 90s and early 2000s. Obviously, The Mandalorian, my God.
Yeah.
What a beautiful show.
You had some trouble with some of the things in episode two. Strigoi is all we will say. We won't even mention.
Don't like creatures and critters. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes. Yes.
I really love The Mandalorian, and not just because of Baby Yoda. I mean, I grew up a huge Yoda fan because honestly, that character was short and funny and smart. And that was all the things that I aimed to be or was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I've called myself Yoda. I'm not going to lie on occasion. Yeah.
You've been accused of speaking in riddles from time to time, I'm sure.
It's true. But I mean, we're also right now watching The Great British Bake Off because that is comfort food for the soul.
Yeah. Have you checked out Raised by Wolves?
I have not. What do you think?
I feel like it's in your wheelhouse.
Okay. I mean,
it's the closest thing to Lost I've seen in a long time.
I thought that was Dark. Everyone's telling me to watch Dark.
They are both of them. I think have Lost DNA in them. Like I think like things that like you like about Lost, you'll like about Dark. Even though the show, as the title implies, is quite dark.
Right.
Raised by Wolves is kind of dark as well, but I think that there's more levity to that than dark. But it's got sort of like this same sense of like people in an unknown circumstances and the world unfolding at a pace that felt very similar to The Island for me.
Okay.
That would be my recommendation for you. Good. If you're looking for something that's going to get the theory brain activated.
Right.
I think Raised by Wolves is something maybe to peep.
Well, that is good to know. Goodness. Yeah. I mean, obviously, my favorite thing of the last few years has been Watchmen.
Of course.
I just cannot believe how phenomenal that one season show was on every level.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For me, I watched finished season two of The Boys. That is not for me. Mm-hmm. I get it. I totally get it. It's the excessive violence, which I know they do for comic relief. It is not for me.
I get it. Yeah. Yeah. I think like if you can't stomach that stuff, then the show is a non-starter.
Right. Totally. In a strange turn of events, I've really enjoyed binging Bosch on Amazon.
Obviously, it's because you love your Man in Black.
I do love Titus Welliver. However, it's like it's a procedural, but it's sort of, I think it's better than your usual detective procedural. I really like Bosch.
People love Bosch. Yeah. I haven't really given Bosch. I think I watched the first season of Bosch, which I hear is the worst.
Oh, interesting. I don't remember it. So maybe it is. But I will say this, to go back one step. I didn't meet Titus Welliver through a Lost event. When I was in Vancouver, the same day I met Liz Mitchell, all the other journalists and bloggers had gone to bed, and I'm like, I'm going to treat myself to a glass of whiskey because I deserve it because I met Liz Mitchell and I'm awesome. So I went to the hotel bar, which is known for a hotel where all the people come who are guest starring on shows in the many productions of Vancouver. I saw Scott Foley walk by, all these people. I mean, I have since seen Sigourney Weaver there and Regina King, which blew my mind, and I didn't have anything to say to them, so I didn't. I digress. So I'm at the bar, and who walks in? I thought I was being punked. Freaking Titus Welliver.
Yeah, the shapeshifter himself.
And I wait a few minutes to disengage if he's waiting for somebody. He's by himself. He's having a glass of wine. So I literally mosey up to the fucking Man in Black. Sorry, language.
No, it's fine.
And I said, hey, Titus. He goes, oh, my God. Are you here to talk about Lost? And before I could even say anything, okay, this is while the final season's airing, he proceeds to tell me, and I'm a spoiler-free person, all about the origin story and Across the Sea and why he's so tan, because he just got back from Hawaii and he told me the whole thing about Alice and Janney and Mother. And I was like, and I write a Lost blog and it's spoiler free. He's like, oh, don't tell anyone. I'm like, don't worry. I won't. And he said,
and that is why Across the Sea is your least favorite episode.
I mean,
Lost.
I felt bad that I hated it so much, but it's not his fault.
Yeah, it's not.
The best thing he said though, as the night went on, I said, I actually came over to talk to you about Deadwood. He's like, oh, okay. We could talk about that too. But he's like, can I tell you the coolest story? I was walking with my son, and he was 8 years old at the time, and we're walking in New York City, and this guy comes running across the street from me, and I'm like, uh-oh. And all he did was come up to me and yell to me and my son, you're the motherfucking smoke monster. And I died laughing. He was laughing. I'm like, that's the greatest story I've ever heard. And then he looked at his son, and his son was like, yeah, my dad's a smoke monster.
That's unbelievably great.
So rad. I mean, that was a happenstance, running him in the bar and learning all that. It was hilarious.
It's incredible. Oh,
yeah, it's great.
Is one of the many reasons why I cherish our friendship is it's twofold within this umbrella, is that, like, you have so many stories like these, that, like, it is just like an endless fountain of, like, incredible, like, gut busting, like, pop culture jaw droppers. But I think it speaks to what I've said a few times here, that I really don't mean to, like, blow you up with compliments and, like, you know, blow smoke or anything, but I really do think that this is your superpower, is, like, you're authentic and you're kind. And I think that gives you, it's like the Harry Potter luck potion, you know. I feel like it gets you into rooms, it gets you into situations. I wish that I had that superpower. And I think it's incredible, and it's so earnest and it's so real, and, like, we're not gonna, like, get off the microphone here and then we're just, like, gonna, like, deflate like a balloon and just, like, be like, screw this, screw that. Like, that's never the tone of our conversation. Like, the tone of our conversation is always, like, the tone of a conversation we have on the record.
Absolutely.
I have never known you to be anything other than the person I'm talking to right now.
Well, you are very kind for illuminating that for me and for other people, and I'm deeply touched by that. And I just want to say that compassion and passion are interwoven in my DNA. Those are the two strands. And so I just want to help other people illuminate lights for them and illuminate a path or make a suggestion that maybe can change and alter their life. I love seeing all these other fans, and especially from the 100 who created their own organizations to raise money for charities and causes that are important to the actors they love. I find that deeply gratifying. And a lot of them have told me it's because they were inspired by Cancer Gets Lost. I mean, you can't get any better than that.
Yeah.
And I feel so lucky that the friendship I have formed with you and with the fans and with the actors, it's like our shared belief in giving back. Yeah. There's a platform for the greater good, and y'all feel it and you all extend it. Your hearts are firmly planted and giving back. And I just want to sort of end this podcast by saying, with regard to Cancer Gets Lost, it is an honor. It is a privilege to continue doing this work, because to help fund research for cures and an ounce of light, to provide an ounce of light or assistance for cancer survivors and their families, there's no greater honor or job, even though it's not a job. I'm in my late 40s, and to be able to say this is the best thing I've done with my life is amazing, because I am nowhere near done yet, Josh.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Where should people go if they want to know more? If they want more of Joe Garfine, if they want more on Cancer Gets Lost, where would you point people?
You're very sweet. I am online on Twitter and Instagram at JoePinionated, which is the word opinionated with a J in front of it. And it's cancergetslost.org is the website, at Cancer Gets Lost on Instagram and Twitter. Right now, we're in planning stages for the 2021 auction to benefit the Colorectal Cancer Society, Cancer Alliance, excuse me. And I literally have 400 to 500 items already. I have to pare it down because I'm just one person trying to figure out and navigate a new post-COVID, hopefully, world of shipping and getting items guaranteed safely to people around the world. And the amount of shows and TV shows and films that we have featured is incredible because of entirely donated by y'all out there. And we always appreciate any items you want to donate for your collections. You can find our contact information all over our website and Twitter and Instagram. And again, a retweet is worth 1,000 followers. A retweet gets us out there during our auctions, and we greatly appreciate it. And Josh, honestly, the opportunity to talk to you on a non-Westworld basis, also to talk about Cancer Gets Lost, it's so delightful. And I appreciate this experience, my friend.
Me as well. All right, Joe. Go back to saving the world. I'll go back to podcasting.
I mean, listen, don't sell yourself short. You do an incredible job. Your interviews with the Hollywood Reporter and your podcast, honestly, I know you're not looking for compliments, but I'm going to blow smoke for you too, which is to say that Josh Wigler is an incredible human/friend, and also interviewer. I think you do incredible work, and your analysis of television is great too.
I appreciate it, Joe. I can't wait until Westworld comes back, primarily so we can get our nerd on. It's always a delight to be doing the podcasts with you. And so if it's not Westworld soon, we'll have to come up with another excuse to get you back on here.
Sounds good, my friend. Take care.
Thanks to Joe Garfine for sharing her origin story. And thank you for listening to Origin Story. If you like what you heard, please rate and review the podcast. And if you really like what you heard, consider becoming a member of the Post Show Recaps patron community at patreon.com/postshowrecaps to show your support for shows like these and much more. We'll be back later with another episode of Origin Story.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.